Welcome to the Just Raise podcast. Today on the show, we are diving into developer tools and social products. Graphite is a new startup taking inspiration from Discord and Twitter to build a new code review tool for engineers. They are growing like crazy and are backed by $20 million from Andreessen Horowitz, specifically Peter Levine, who invested in GitHub Series A, and GitHub's founder and GitHub's current CEO, which is a big deal if you're building a developer tools company. We have both founders on the show today, Greg Foster and Tomas Ramirez. So I hope you enjoy this conversation with Graphite. Marketing is a key hire for startups, but finding the right people is a task. Marketer Hire leverages AI and in-house recruiters to find elite marketing professionals fast. Sign up for a no-risk trial at marketerhire.com. All right, Tomas, Greg, it is great to have you both on the show. To start us off, can you tell us what Graphite is and what you're building for developers?
Hey, Joe. Thanks for having us. Great to be here. Mm-hmm. Graphite is code review for fast-moving teams. For those of you who aren't familiar with code review is a peer review process that most engineering firms go through. Whenever you have a bunch of engineers together, they can release code to the users. Before they can do that, it usually has to be reviewed and approved by another engineer on the team. Code review is that process. It's very common in the industry, and it's gone uniterated on for quite some time, so we're hoping to fix that for everyone.
So your business itself has evolved out of another startup that you had started. What were you initially trying to do with Screenplay, I think it was, before it became Graphite?
When we came together, I'll give a little bit of the background story because it's quite fun. Tomas, Merrill, and myself, the three co-founders, we'd all been friends since college. We all studied CS. You know, we had been parts of the same clubs. Tomas and I had been project partners on nearly every class going through college. And we'd go out to San Francisco and do internships and share like Airbnb bedroom floors during internships and go on adventures. We had been friends for so long, but we'd always wanted to create a company. We had a love of software quality, how engineering is performed, dev tools as a general space. We wanted to come together and create something meaningful here. At the time, Merrill was in industry working as a PM in New York. Tomas was engineering at Facebook, and I was working at Airbnb, but all within the same space. And we realized it was the right time to jump from our jobs, take that leap, and create something cool together. The initial project that we set out with and product to build, when we talked to tons of companies doing user research, we found a hunger to improve software quality, but not slow down the team and not write a bunch of tests. We thought that was interesting. And I had worked on teams building rollback software at Airbnb and seeing just how powerful it was is if you just ship changes very quickly and if any mistakes roll out, just quickly press an undo button. We found within the market that there were certain platforms, take iOS or Android, that you couldn't undo changes quickly. In the current state of the world, it takes 2 days often to get a hotfix built, submitted, approved, and released to users who hopefully install it. And we worked together. We're very smart engineers. We worked together and we built novel systems around rolling back mobile applications. And we hunted this idea for a year plus. We built cool technology around it. We got in the hands of a couple initial companies and applications. But honestly, it wasn't just taking off like a rocket ship. We weren't feeling that extreme pull as we were building it out. People were interested, but it was new. It was top-down sales motion. People had to move their entire application to it. And in the interim, working with Tomas, we started building out some internal tooling around how we were doing our code review. Because at this point, we had enough engineering going on where we were starting to iterate on our own internal practices. You want to talk about that?
Yeah, I mean, so I'm very fortunate that I have the chance to work with two of my old coworkers. So they came and joined this company after we started. We, coming from Facebook, I guess now Meta, were very used to a very specific style of code review. And when we sort of came out here into the open, we felt it. I think for the first little bit, I remember having a conversation with both of them when they joined being like, yeah, so how do you engineer, right? And it was like, well, I'm not really sure. Like this workflow is different. It's slower, it feels like, to us. Is there something we can do to speed it up? And so at the time we thought about hosting Fabricator, this is this other tool we talked about. The problem is that it's not interoperable with the tools that many modern engineering teams use today, things like GitHub.
Yeah, so, I mean, Fabricator is kind of like a clone of some of Facebook, whatever Facebook had in 2012, essentially. And I'm sitting here as a former Airbnb engineer who had been using stock GitHub, the more kind of common approach. And when I heard from Tomas and Nick, our teammate, and they said, hey, why don't we just move our stack to this old PHP app that has a very janky interface, but we're gonna, but we love it for a couple of reasons. I was like, no, you know, I don't think we can go all in on and host this open source project that's about to be killed. Like, you know, there's some benefits, but it wasn't compelling.
So we built our own thing, and I think that was we built this. This is February of 2021. Mm-hmm. I want to say just about January, February, depending on how you count. And so we built it. Didn't think much about it, used it internally, iterated on it internally. And what was interesting was we would have people who would look at it and be like, oh, how are you doing that? And we were like, don't worry about that. Like, that's not our product. Go use our other product. And when it got to the point when we could not ignore it any longer was that summer. So the summer comes around, Fabricator announces, we are not going to be a company. We had a lot of alumni, old colleagues, reach out, friends, just reach out and be like, hey, what are you using? I think I really need it. Like, I really don't want to have to move my workflow to this thing I don't want. What can we do about it? And so it was August was the month which we were like, okay, this is going to be our experiment month. Let's see if we can get 20 users to use this and take it from there. And we got 40 users. There were 40 users who were like, no, I need to be a part of this beta. What do I need to do? And we're like, fine, you can be a part of the beta. We don't care. 40 of you. It went well. We saw a lot of regular usage. A lot of large companies were represented in there, even from the get-go. Mm-hmm. We made it all the way to, this is November, when we launched our waitlist. We were expecting about 500 signups. We got 3,500, which was crazy to us. We were like, this is a lot. Oh, and I'm sorry, I skipped a step. So August happened. We had those 40 users, 20, then 40. We were like, okay, I think we should probably go all in on this. And so we took the previous thing we were working on, screenplay, we paused development. We're like, we're not sure where this path goes, but let's explore it. And so that's what led us down this waitlist. And in November, when we release the waitlist, we get 3,500 signups. That's a lot. We start letting them off incrementally between then and January. Growth moves fast. The user number just keeps going up. There are more users than at least we as a team of, I think, six, only four engineers can support. And we're like, okay, this is a lot. It seems like there's something here. Let's figure out what we need to do to make this work.
It's like the most organic pivot I can think of in a product, in that people were just we'd be trying to sell, you know, product number A, and people are just like pulling us on the other one. It felt like night and day, you know, being able to hand people something they really want to, even in its most MVP form, people were willing to walk on broken glass to use it. And that really reassured us it was the right direction.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly what you want to see when you try to, well, when you're not trying to sell a product at first. And I mean, it reminds me of the Slack story where they're trying to build TinySpec, a game. They build an internal communications tool, which in some ways this kind of is internal communications. And that was obviously a much bigger business down the line.
My conclusion, it's a lot of the early stages of a company is iterating, learning, being open-minded, seeing what people actually want from you and what you're building. I think if we were to have been closed-minded to that, we would have just kept heads down, disciplined on the original idea, and we wouldn't be working on something that's obviously so much more exciting to the market.
The thing I think is actually really interesting about it is, in some ways, I think that it's almost a better way to start a company, because where this came from was truly a just very organic need of, I need this. I'm going to build it. We're going to take our own time and we're going to build it. Mm. And eventually we heard other people who were like, I also need that. And we're like, okay, well, like that's it. It didn't start from the, oh, we like analyzed the market. This made the most sense to go there. So we should do that. It started with, hey, we need this. We're going to build it. And then people asked us about it. And then we're like, okay, well, before we should build a real business here, we should probably go look at the market and figure out, is this a space that's worth building in?
I think it's how a lot of the best dev tools come about.
Yeah.
Yeah, they start internally with very, very little vision, and then they get pulled.
Yeah, I mean, speaking of dev tools, you have some incredible investors on your board now and in this $20 million raise, including the partner at Andreessen Horowitz, who initially funded GitHub, which was not an obvious bet at the time. That has got to really assure your customers, I'm sure, having them on the board. How did that kind of come together?
I'll add two more to that. So I want to tell that story. The other thing I'll add is, first of all of our angels are amazing. We're super excited to have all of them. Two other ones particularly relevant to that story are we also have the founder of GitHub and the current CEO of GitHub. So I'm gonna leave that along with many former executives and I think current executives from GitHub as well. So
yeah, GitHub likes us. So
we'll put that there. So how that came about. So for those of you who don't know, Peter Levine led our round. He's at A16Z. He led that first initial round in GitHub when it was not an obvious bet. We have been super impressed with Andreessen. So they reached out to us. I think, Greg, you were the one they first made contact with.
Yeah, this must have been back in maybe February-ish.
Yeah. They reached out to us. And I think the thing that was most interesting to us was when they reached out, it was like, hey, like, we want to meet you. We would later learn they had done a lot of the research at that point. So at that point, they'd already talked to a lot of our users. They'd talked to our old colleagues. I think in their mind, they were like, all right, this seems too good to be true. Let's figure it out. And it was that initial conversation. I wasn't in the room. Greg took that.
We did a standard presentation of what we were working with and why we thought it was exciting. But I think in the back of their heads, they were like, yeah, we are actually looking for a company in the space. They're like, we had this from their perspective. They were interested in the code review space. And they were waiting for the right company to come and build that idea. And when they saw us, I think it just kind of matched in their heads.
Yeah, it was funny. I later talked to a different partner at Andreessen who had one of the investors working on our deal. And what they said was, I was like, yeah, so you probably already heard about our deal. I'm like, honestly, no. They came into our office. I bumped into them. I didn't even know they were in New York. I'm like, why are you here? They're like, there's a company. They're exactly what I need. I'm going to make them sign this week. And that's all you need to know.
It was a great time. Yeah. We talked to a lot of different investors. And I think Andreessen was particularly, at least the partners we were working with, particularly professional on top of their stuff. And it was a match made in heaven. You know, made perfect sense.
Very happy to be working with them. I think they bring a lot of insight already. We've started to see that when we're like, oh, like, how do you think about this? And they're like, GitHub thought about this many years ago. And we're like, great. Can you just save us the work? What did they do?
There's
like,
not a lot of people in the world who have explored this space incredibly deeply, but the people who have, we're getting, you know, advice from. And that's really helpful to us.
Yeah. So the fact that they have a team looking at this space means it's obviously, there's obviously a need here because they're pretty experienced in this market. Why do you think this has been unexplored for so long?
The timing is just right now in that code review, as Tomas was alluding to, itself is relatively new. It's only maybe 15 years old, depending on how you want to count it in its modern form. GitHub was good enough for time being and became a de facto default. It got adopted by many companies. The largest companies open sourced some of their software around 2010, 2012, but then stopped maintaining it. For a short time, that was also good enough, but then started becoming quite dated. And then when you look in the last 3 years, the options have really fallen off. So critique by Google's open source version is really only being used for the Android product and not much else. Fabricator, Facebook's alternative, has been end-of-lifed as of the summer. Bitbucket, which was a very small company offering code hosting and code review by Atlassian, is shutting down. You're really left with GitLab and GitHub. And for the first time in the last couple of years, GitHub, as Tomas said, has opened up their API so that people could actually build products with them that sync back and forth to them and that can be interoperable. Simultaneously, GitHub was, in the last few years, acquired by Microsoft. I think a lot of their focus has shifted to products that drive Microsoft Azure compute spend. So you think about continuous integration tests. They have a product called GitHub Copilot, which helps do machine learning on your code as you're typing it. These kind of products drive towards this massive engine that they have of Azure to compete with AWS. Code review is a little bit less of a priority for them right now. They're more happy to work with another company and focus on the code hosting. All these things, I think, have aligned in this perfect moment of timing where there's just a space to attack.
I think the other thing I'll sort of like add here is I think for a long time, everyone thought, well, maybe there's this world where every company needs their own code review tool. Like maybe that makes sense. And I think what's interesting is when we talk to a lot of enterprise teams, there's enough cross-pollination throughout these software companies that when we ask them like, hey, what kind of features do you really want for your version of team level or enterprise level code review? You hear the same things, and you hear the same things because honestly, a lot of these people have worked at the same companies, right? Where it's like, oh, well, I had this at a previous company. Oh, you had this at this company. Great. And you just want that. Great. We understand that feature. And so I think that there is a consensus forming around, yes, this is what good enterprise level code review works and looks like that big companies have distilled. And by big, I mean sort of like, let's say DoorDash, Uber, Facebook, Microsoft, Amazon, upwards. And I think that everyone else also has this idea of like what it should be, but doesn't necessarily have the tooling to get there.
Yeah. There's some really good ideas that have just otherwise been a little bit too in the fringes that we're bringing out. The most interesting idea that Graphite, our code review tooling, puts front and center is this idea of stacking your code changes. So up until now, through the open source community, through GitHub, you had this pattern where people, they create one large change to the code base, and that might be 100 lines, 1,000 lines, even bigger. In the open source land, that might exist for a month, have a large discussion around it, and eventually get merged in. Within companies, there's a known truism that plentiful small changes is just a much better workflow. You have like a stream of 10 line changes, 50 line changes constantly going out the door, independently getting reviewed, all very, very easy to review, and each independently passing tests. But the open source tooling, the GitHub, wasn't really supporting this. It was really hard because you'd write your small change and you'd be waiting for someone to come along and review it. And you're kind of blocked. You're like, okay, I work on something else, or I just continue and bloat this change and make it bigger. Otherwise, I'm stuck. And what Graphite empowers, this is stolen from Facebook. This isn't a new idea, was why not just stack those code changes? Why not create a branch off a branch off a branch and continue stacking changes so that you could have a stack of 10, 20 high, each only 50 lines, say, and then let them get reviewed whenever and merge them in as a chunk, merge them in independently, but never be blocked. This idea of stack changes that it's existed in the space for a while, but there's never been the tooling to support it from a primary code review product.
I'll actually take it a step further. I think this idea of like stacking changes actually, and Facebook in turn stole it from Linux development in some ways, where they have this whole idea of like, I write some code changes, I email it to a potential contributor, they're the ones who actually contribute it. And if I have multiple changes, I just break those out and email them one after the other to that person. And so I think that actually these ideas have their roots like long, long ago. It so happens that the industry settled on the tool before the workflow, so be it. Yeah. Because of that, that locked us into a workflow. Okay, we've used that for a while. I think for the first time, GitHub, and incredible respect for them for what they're doing, are trying to make themselves a platform. They're saying, hey, we don't need to own everything. Actually, we're very okay with other people building on top of us. Mm. And we believe like, hey, that makes total sense. Let's see if we can then actually start to provide value to that platform, right? Where like GitHub makes a ton of sense as a code host. Please keep using them for that. Use us for code review. Mm-hmm. And I think that's its own process. And we interoperate with GitHub. If you're a single developer, if you want to try using us for code review, your teammates don't need to change anything. You just need to change.
That was born out of me and Tomas's early debates in the company where he's like, hey, I got this Facebook workflow. And I'm like, that's not what I had at Airbnb. But if you want to use that and not disrupt mine, go for it. And over time, over 6 months, I saw him engineering. And I'm like, this is actually better. Let me adopt this. But we wanted to start from a place where any individual person can use this workflow, can be more productive without having to get buy-in from the entire company or from their entire team. That's why syncing and interoperability with GitHub is so important to us.
From a non-developer perspective, to see if I can break that down and then I have that correct, it sounds like when you're going to ship code, if you ship 2,000 lines at once and line 3 has a bug in it, you're potentially screwed, which is why you do code review in blocks of 50 lines of code. And then what this allows you to do is actually take those lines of code and instead of being in series and doing one after another, it allows you to fork off and go into essentially parallel and develop in parallel and not be blocked by having to wait for your team to come in and check all of your code for each segment. Yeah,
there's this great study out of Google, I believe, that compares internally across their like massive numbers of code changes. The bigger the code change is, the slower it gets reviewed because all of your teammates procrastinate it. And when they do review it, the worse it gets reviewed. It gets actually fewer comments and feedback if it's a massive change versus if it's like lots of little changes. So there's like, there's all this good research around why you should have plentiful small changes. It just hasn't really been feasible with the tooling up until now.
You know, Joe, the analogy I like to make to people that I think helps them get it is, let's say that I'm writing an email and I'm like, hey, Joe, can you review this email? You're probably like, sure, Tomas. Yeah, that's fine. Right? Even if I were to send you 10 emails to review, you're probably like, that's fine. Now let's pretend I send you my 10-page manifesto, right? You're like, what? I don't have time for this. I have a real job to get to, right? Uh-huh. Are you going to read the manifesto? No. Yeah. Are you, if you did have to approve it, would you actually read it? Or would you be like, looks fine, I trust Moss, just like get it off my plate.
Well, and if you break it up 10 right? parts, you know, Joe can review it, or two different people on your team can review different parts of it. And you can merge in the first part while you're still writing the second part. You know, just fragmenting it out. We often think about collaborative software. You know, a lot of the modern tools of the world are getting a lot more collaborative. We have like Google Docs and Notion and Figma. They're letting people work together in real time instead of saving these files. We think in the world of collaborative engineering, software engineering, the smallest unit you can break it down to is small code changes. You probably won't actually see a world where you have like a code editor with two cursors, similar to Google Docs. You probably won't see that because code, the intermediate state is constantly broken. And it's only when you like reach a working state that you can break off a chunk, save it, and put it up for review. So we think the closest we can get to that real-time collaboration is creating very, very small code changes, but each of which still runs and passes independently. And that's how we'll kind of push the ball forward on this collaboration.
Every time I ask a founder, what is most important to you right now? They say hiring. Finding the right people is tough. Which is why Marketer Hire has created a frictionless hiring process for businesses looking to hire marketing professionals. And I've got to say, it's impressive. They make it easy to match elite marketing professionals to businesses like yours fast. Sign up today and get matched with a no-risk trial at marketerhire.com. I love this idea of multiplayer and collaboration, in part because I've talked to like a bunch of different companies recently that are all building these types of products, and they're inherently viral because if one person comes on and starts using your product, Graphite, they then share that with their team, and then suddenly 10 people are using it, and you know, collaborative tools are great for growth. And then you combine that with the shifts in the market where there's really nothing else that does this for the small business layer that's not like the giant FAANG companies.
I mean, code review is just such a collaborative process within companies. I think what we see is one person will adopt it. Maybe they came from Facebook, maybe they just read about it online. And then their teammates are like, wow, my teammate's putting up a lot of like really good code at a high velocity. And they see some of like the tooling that they're using, and they have to, because they're reviewing each other and they're going back and forth. And we just see it naturally spread across teams. I think we've done like zero marketing, zero selling. Like all of our growth has just been natural spread, which to us is really exciting. It's intimidating because it means we got to build a lot of good product and keep it stable, but it lets us focus on what we care about most.
The user love on this, Joe, is absolutely incredible. So we have this wins channel where what we do is we post like screenshots that our users send of messages our users send us. And sometimes you get the nicest messages, which is crazy to me. We've seen quite a few messages from engineers at large companies. I remember one very specifically who was like, listen, I found the Graphite workflow last Tuesday. It was Wednesday. Like yesterday was my most productive day ever in my full career as an engineer. This is just a better way to code. Like, thank you. Like, it was wild to read that. And you don't see that infrequently. You actually see a lot of people who are like, hey, like, I'd heard about this before. I'd always wanted to do this. I wanted to do this, but I didn't know how, something like that. And then I found your tool and it just made everything a lot better.
Yeah, I used to work at DevTools at Airbnb, and I did not get this level of positive feedback. I got a lot more begrudging, like, I have to use this, but it's kind of annoying. This is the first DevTool I've worked on where people are just incredibly kind and supportive, I think because they want to see it succeed.
The analogy I've liked to make around Graphite is iMessage. So you should think about the GitHub layer sort of as SMS of, we are a very fancy GitHub client. Like, if your coworkers are all on GitHub, Like, that's totally fine. You can still communicate with them. That's absolutely okay. We just happen to be like fairly fast, easy to use. There's a lot of positive user interactions in there.
You're saying we're the blue bubble in the green bubble.
I think that there's a lot of magic that happens once two users who both use Graphite start working together. So once you get one of your teammates to be like, oh, actually, like, this tool you're using, it's kind of cool. I kind of like it. Let me try it. Suddenly the things that we can do for both of you is much more powerful. Because suddenly we can say like, okay, let's make this experience a lot better for both of you. And so that's been our growth strategy so far. It's worked really well. We're very happy with it. And so are our users. And we hope to continue that.
Yeah. And you never want to text someone and get a green bubble back. You know, then you have to peer pressure them into using the correct iOS platform.
when we were starting up, Tomas was walking into this company with an Android phone, and Merrill and I said, hey, one of our deal breakers, you gotta swap to an iPhone, because we're not going to work shoulder to shoulder for years and deal with green bubbles.
I mean, they're modular, you know. Did you build your own phone?
That would have been the right answer.
That's what we pivoted again.
No. But so, yeah, that's how we think about code review.
It's very interesting to compare against your initial idea for a screenplay, in that didn't have the virality baked in. I don't mean to insult screenplay. Yeah. I'm sure it was but it sounds more like almost an insurance play, because it's you guys are going to make a mistake at some point, and when that happens, you need this. And that is like you said, that's a sales motion where you have to build the sales team and they have to talk to enterprise clients. And like insurance, it's kind of gotta be like you pay a subscription and then you never use it, and it's just inherently something that doesn't generate instant value or customer love or have the virality of like bring on the rest of your team. And it's not like a B2C to B where like you just need one developer to start using it, and then everyone's going to be using Blue Bubble Graphite across the team.
I mean, you hit the nail on the head. That is exactly what we saw, some of the challenges we saw internally. And that's what I think we love that Graphite is this bottoms up motion, because that was one of the real pain points. I think dev tools that are top down sales are very hard.
Yeah. I mean, I think there are dev tools which can be top down sales. A few jokes that we make now around screenplays. Insurance is one of those things that most people need to be legally mandated to buy before they really consider it. It's right as a statement. And as one who did sales for both, or I lead growth for both Graphite and this, it is certainly night and day. So for screenplay, it was very much a conversation of like, listen, I promise you one day there will be a mistake. We'll be here. We'll help you. But that aha moment of like, yes, this makes sense is so far away from signing up. Where with Graphite, what we usually find is that the aha moment for a developer is within 5 minutes of signing up, right? Mm. Like you sign up, you make your first stack. You're like, I get it. It makes sense. Yeah. I should use this always. And then you'll get better at it as time goes on. And maybe you'll be like, oh, how do I fix this? And for that, we have a whole Slack community. But what's crazy is as it grows throughout the company, what we see is the companies then come to us as one now doing growth. I certainly have a few companies who are coming to me and being like, can we pay you so that we can sign a contract because we want a contract? And I'm like, this is new and weird. Like, I don't want to charge you. That's not my goal. Right now, our goal is to sort of like advocate for a workflow throughout the industry. Yeah. I think that we are bringing sort of this like new workflow. We're hoping to write a page of the engineering handbook for time to come. And so for us, what's most important is getting the users, getting that mind share, saying like, hey, no, like we're here for a while, and to remove any barrier to adoption. On the flip side, these companies are like, yeah, but you can see our source code. And so what can we do to get a contract in place? And so that, I think, is one of the things where we've gone through a lot of hoops to get security compliances and make sure that we can put legal contracts in place with the companies that need it. And so on and so forth. But
yeah, Tomas is a champ. He's endlessly like iterating and improving our security, like doubling down on all the legal compliance. It is not an easy workload.
Yeah, well, you're almost like a media company in that sense. You go completely free, don't paywall anything. It's a freemium because you want to get as many people on as possible. And you almost have network dynamics where as people come on, more people come on, and you can pick up a big chunk of the market fast.
I think that code review is a fundamentally like social media like experience. There are network effects. I think that code review, a thing I've said many times, is code review is the second most important moment for most developers. The first is their text editor, and you'll never get them to change that. That is a deeply personal decision. Like the text editor developer uses, many actually still use text editors from like the 70s or 90s. And they're like, this is what I die with. And you're like, okay, we're not here to change that. Code Review, though, is the first social moment. And at many large companies and even medium-sized companies, Code Review is the gateway into the remainder of the developer tools ecosystem, right? When you start using Code Review, it's like, oh, suddenly I need to deploy my code to users. I need to revert it. I want to understand how many users have been exposed to it. Questions like that gets answered through the Code Review platform, because as you said, there's social pressure, right? If both you and Greg are using something, suddenly I'm going to start using it, because why would I be the odd person left out?
Yeah. I mean, one of the smallest, in the vein of like social stuff, one of the smallest features we've stolen from Fabricator and Facebook that people really asked us for was just like company meme libraries. People at Facebook, great. They had this where, you know, you with your team within your company, you could build up a library of funny memes, which would help defang otherwise, you know, the process of Code Review, which can sometimes be a little bit intense, a little emotional. And they build out like these inside jokes and stuff. GitHub never had support for this. It was one of the first things we put back, and it brought this like levity, this happy social aspect to Code Review. I think there's so much more we can tap into.
Yeah. So if you're a former Googler listening, you know this as meme gen. If you're a former Fabricator user, you know this as macros. It's crazy to me. When we first started building this, we had so many users who were like, yeah, I heard there were macros here. I'm only here for that. And you're like, what? Yeah. Like there's a lot of other value here. And they're like, no, give me the memes. And I think that, to take a step back and to look at that from a more serious perspective, Code Review is a regular feedback moment that most developers go through every day, right? It's fundamentally a human-to-human connection when Greg and I talk to each other around sort of how we're doing our profession. And I think what's interesting is that there is one version of Code Review where you can suddenly become like very strict and professional to say something like, Greg, I think that this is a terrible or great decision because blank, 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 and blank, blank, blank. Or you can just put a GIF that shows a person having the same reaction. They communicate the same thing, but one gets swallowed much more easily.
Yeah.
And so I think it's a lot of that is around keeping like the culture and keeping communication fast. Because at the end of the day, we're all on the same team and we're just trying to move the ball forward as fast as we can. To say, how do we deliver more features faster to users so that we can build a better product?
What's your favorite Code Review meme?
That's a good question. I really like a lot. So Code Review, in case you, for those of you who don't know, Code Review has this entire metaphor with shipping. So one of my favorite Code Review memes is a ship that takes off from a port and then just falls over on its side. Because frequently I'll see pieces of code where I'm like, I think this will ship. But I mean, if it just falls over, we'll see what happens.
Which is just like Discord, right? Because Discord like has their own set of memes for each channel. And if you're a gamer and you join that Discord, you learn the memes, like you can drop them while someone's live streaming based on what happens.
Exactly.
I think it's the same thing. Yeah.
So it's fundamentally a messaging tool, right? Like I go to ship some code, I send it out to Code Review, and then the one way to do it would be, you know, Greg, you're like, Joe, this is terrible. This doesn't work. Do you even know how to code? Which I don't. And then there's the other way to do it, which is like, you know, here's like a meme, like here's a boat like falling over. We're not going to ship this. Like, go do it again. And it's fundamentally like a human communication tool. And I imagine like that layer of communication defines kind of how teams work together, like the culture inside the company. Because especially if you're working remote, like you have Slack, but that's like where your work gets reviewed, which is, I think most people in most jobs just don't have their work reviewed every day in that capacity.
10 times a day. It's so important. I mean, that's where the quality bar is upheld. That's where the teaching moments happen, where sometimes more experienced people will help in a positive manner, up-level the understanding of other people. It is, I think, one of the most important processes that happen on any engineering team. I think the average person spends maybe 30 minutes to an hour on it a day.
I would say more than that. I think that most of the developer day is spent in Code Review. Usually, not necessarily actually doing Code Review, but responding to other people's comments, right? Because I come to work every day and I see, okay, here's the code you wrote yesterday. Here are the comments on it. Respond to them, either ship it off to users or go ahead, edit it, put it back up for review, receive more comments on it. So on and so forth. The one clarification I'll make is, while I do think we have challenges of real-time communication platforms, I do think one of the things we aspire to be is asynchronous, right? I think a lot of the developer workflow can be asynchronous. This is the whole idea of you need long chunks of uninterrupted time. And so what you want is you want those messaging features, you want those memes, you want those GIFs, you want whatever you need, but you want to do it in such a way where you're not constantly bothering the reviewer or the author. Sure, in certain moments, it's important to be like, hey, like when you get a chance, please review this. But certainly you don't want to be doing that all the time. Otherwise, it would make it very hard to engineer on either side.
Yeah. It's all about being unblocked and moving fast.
Exactly.
Are there any other lessons you're taking from social products?
Many of them. I think a lot of it, Merrill, who's our third co-founder, he is a PM by trade and I think has much more developed ideas on this. The few that I'll give you is one is let's make sure that we keep the communication sort of like light and human, right? We need it to ultimately like keep flowing and keep encouraging the conversation. I think one is around making people aware of who else. When I made the iMessage analogy somewhat jokingly, but not so jokingly, making people aware of like who else is using Graphite. Who else can you use these Graphite-only features with? Who can you not use these Graphite-only features with? And part of it is the on-ramp, right? While we can provide a better experience actually to two users who both use Graphite, we can sometimes provide an on-ramp, let's say, to other people. So for example, if you post a meme using Graphite, we can't tell the other person like, hey, if you really like this, like favorite it, because GitHub has no concepts of favorites when we move it back there. What we can tell them is we can throw a link on that meme to say, yeah, if you click this, like, here's your team's meme library, like, sign up to get access, right? And so I think that there are these on-ramp features that you see in other social products.
That's similar to, like, the sent from my iPhone.
Yeah, exactly.
On emails, right? This little bit of a backlink.
Yeah, and I think that there are a lot of social products around how people collaborate, how they work together. Figma's another great example of a professional collaborative together product. Linear is another one we take a lot of inspiration from. Of how do we make this thing individually valuable, but easy to onboard and to have even more value once everyone's together.
The last section I do with everyone on the show is a lightning round. And the first question I always love to ask is, what's top of mind for you right now? What are the three things that have to happen over the next 6 months for Graphite to take off?
Hiring.
Hiring team, would be another one.
And then getting more engineers,
designers, be all three. Of them. In all seriousness, I think hiring is the biggest thing top of mind right now. We have a lot of features we know we want to ship. We have, without breaking any NDAs, we have a lot of large companies who really want to use us. I promise you have heard of the names, which we would love to build enterprise features for, and we just don't have the bandwidth for. We know that junior developers have like a slew of features that they need to onboard. It's actually really difficult to, I think as a junior developer, learning Git and this entire concept of code review can be a hard thing to use. And it's a place where I think we stand to make a difference by making it much simpler. Can't build that until we hire more engineers. And then we have a whole bunch of actually really interesting data problems in terms of how we work with GitHub and other code hosting stores, which again, we cannot build until we hire more engineers. And so for us, what's top of mind is hiring.
If you were starting from scratch tomorrow, what would you have done differently?
I don't know if we have the same answer, so I'd be interested in hearing both of ours. The joking answer for me is I would have just started with code review, right? We definitely took a long while to sort of, we took a bit of time to build this and then built another thing and then realized like, oh, like actually this is where the value is. The more serious answer is perhaps the path was important, right? Like I don't know if we had started here directly, if we would have had a robust product. Because at this point we've been building this product for what, like a year and a few months, even though it seems much younger than that.
Beyond Graphite, what is one company that you think everyone will be talking about in 18 months from now?
One company I really love that I think we all look up to is Linear. They create task management software and they do it in the most beautiful product possible. That's lightning fast, wonderful shortcuts. Everything they touch from their documentation to their website to the product itself is just such a high quality bar. They provide thought leadership on how teams should organize sprints and organize their tasks. I think we all really look up to Linear and how they execute as a company. And I hope their product becomes infinitely popular.
The last question I ask everybody on the show is, where would you like to see Graphite in 10 years?
I think we're writing a page of the engineering handbook. Right. I really hope that when we talk about how software is built in 10 years, it's like, well, yes, of course you use Graphite. That's the de facto standard. That's what we hope we're building towards.
Yeah, it's a fascinating company. I mean, talking through all the dynamics from the market to how you're ultimately building like a social product is not at all what I would have expected. So yeah, Tomas and Greg, thank you both for coming on the show.
Thank you so much, Joe.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, it was a pleasure.